Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome again to Open Government Radio. Today's date is March 30th, 2010, and I'm your host, Steve Buckley. And today's show, you can follow along with today's show by going to my blog and looking up the blog posting at ustransparency.com, all one word, and look for the posting for March 30th. And as you will see there, the topic for today is who should own OpenGov within a federal agency? And you can see if you go along that's the best way to follow along with the show rather than us spelling out the website addresses and so forth and so on. All the links are there. And I will say that before I introduce our guest for today, who is Steve Raddick, I already did it. But I wanted to take care of a few announcements. If you're following along on the blog's website there at U.S. Transparency, we have some links down near the bottom of the posting talking about Transparency Camp, which has some links. That was last weekend in D.C., and you can follow the links there to find out what happened in case you weren't able to attend. Coming up, you'll see link number 3, Participation Camp, is coming up on April 17th, and there's a link there. That's also in D.C. And finally, or at least for now, another D.C. Workshop on the Open Government Directive Workshop, which is number 4 in the series, will take place on Wednesday, April 28th in D.C. at the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture. And coincidentally, I guess, you can see at the very last link down there, there's some breaking news. Just discovered today that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has released a draft open government plan. It's not actually due out in final until April 7th, but they're releasing it, according to this article in Federal Computer Week, for some comments that they can incorporate by April 7th, which is really very, for bureaucracies, that's operating at the speed of light. So I'm very happy to see that somebody has done that. One of the agencies has put out their draft. Usually that's the way things work in Washington. You put out a draft and people comment on it, as opposed to crowdsourcing and then issuing a final. So anyway, we'll get back to some of those things. But perhaps towards the end of the program, if people want to talk about the USDA draft and go, because there is a link. If you follow the links, you can actually pull up the draft, and maybe someone can tell us some more about that. But and the call-in number we'll get to later on, but the call-in number, if you want to call in and join the discussion, is 917-388-4210. And, of course, that's if you can't locate that number, just go to OpenGov Radio, and the phone number's there. Or it's also posted on the blog posting. Okay, so anyway, Steve Raddick, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Steve. Good to be here.
Good, great. Glad you could join us. I know you've been on Adriel Hampton's Gov2O radio. That of course takes place. He has that on Sunday evenings, which can be cut both ways. Whenever I have it on Tuesdays at 2, everybody's always busy. So it's either one or the other.
Well, I always told Adriel that he's not a big football fan. It's tough for me to get away from football on Sundays.
Oh, yeah. So there's no good time. So just pick a time, and that's what I try to do. I try to stick with it. You know, I figure, well, Tuesdays at 2, that's easy to remember. So hopefully people will pick up on that. And I'm hoping that as the open government plans come out and they get tweaked and fine-tuned and so forth and so on, that this will be a good time for people to sit around their open government conference table listening to the show and calling in with their questions and trying to find out how everybody else is doing it instead of everybody reinventing the wheel.
Right.
So, but you've been, I put a little description there on the blog post. You're an associate at Booz Allen Hamilton, and you want to just explain to those who aren't following right now on the website, you want to just give a little background about your work?
Sure. Sure, yeah. I started at Booz Allen about 6 years ago. I'm just a communications consultant, total background in public relations and media relations and all of the traditional communications and public affairs functions that our clients, which is 99.9% our federal government, that they are interested in doing. And that's kind of where I cut my teeth here until about 3 years ago when I started using Intellipedia and some other behind-the-firewall social media. And I said, you know, this is where things are going. You know, whether we like it or not, whether the institution wants to do this or not, this is kind of the evolution of where things are going, and we need to be not only using it ourselves, but kind of leading with it as well. And so I really dove into social media, and I can't even remember how many conferences I attended that first year to try and get to know everyone that I possibly could. And for the last 3 years, I've been building up our team here at Booz Allen, both strategic communicators, which is where we started, but also in building up our IT expertise and cybersecurity expertise and privacy expertise and really going at taking all of those angles, both internally and with our clients, with open government and social media and how to do that in a way that actually means something versus, hey, I have 10,000 Twitter followers, yay us. Well, what are those Twitter followers doing for you? What's your whole point of being, you know, using social media, whether it's internally or externally? So that's kind of my angle, I guess, of how I look at things is, you know, I always like to say it's not about the technology, but what the technology enables. So that's kind of the minute-long rundown on me.
Okay, great. Well, I wasn't aware when you said 99.9% of your clients are federal. I didn't realize it was that high.
Yeah, I mean, we have some nonprofit work that we do and some pro bono work. But when you know, we split and Carlyle Group purchased Booz Allen Hamilton, you know, the commercial arm of Booz Allen went to and became Booz and Company. So there were two separate companies now.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Okay. Well, that's still a pretty high number.
Yeah.
I would have 90%. I would have thought high. But at the same time, you know, if there's something, I know it can be a little touchy with clients, and if we're speaking today, and you're throwing out examples or something like that, I you know, you can qualify your remarks so people don't think that you're talking about them.
Right.
of course.
That might be good or bad.
yeah, depending on what the comment is. But if it's not complimentary, then everybody will think you're talking about them.
Sure.
So by saying that you have many clients, I'm trying to provide you with some cover by saying that whatever you say here may or may not be about any particular federal agency. So now that we've muddied the waters sufficiently on that, hopefully you won't get in any trouble in that respect. And I say that as a former federal bureaucrat myself, so I know the mindset. Fine. So yes, and for those, like I said, who aren't following along on a blog or online right now, maybe listening later, that your blog is called Social Media Strategy.
Strategery.
strategery. No,
yes.
You say strategery, I say strategery. Anyway, but the easy way to remember that is steveradick.com. Right?
Yes.
With Radick spelled with one D, R-A-D-I-C-K. All one word, steveradick.com. So easy to spell out and remember as a website address goes. And so anyway, I did, of course, see this posting last week. You had it slightly different than I put it of the topic today, but it's very similar, I think, very, very much related, at least in many people's minds. Your posting was, who owns social media? Everyone and no one. And there were, and that would be link number one if you are following along at ustransparency.com, but that's link number one there. And people go there, they will see that Jesus was about 38 comments or something. That's not usually, how many do you usually get?
I think this is pretty standard. You know, some generate more buzz in the Twitter sphere and on Facebook, but as far as actual comments go, I think that this is fairly standard. It ebbs and flows as with all blog posts.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and rather than just read these comments, certainly people can. Go to that link and see what the comments are, and even add their own. I did put something there last night or earlier today, and so maybe some of them calling. I see we do have a couple callers who are waiting. So once we stop talking, we can take some of their calls. What was the gist of it? I guess yes. If you could summarize your posting and.
Sure.
And 38 comments, all in one breath, and or a breath or two. How would you capture it?
Well, I think the genesis of the post was that I had been talking with a number of different clients, and they ranged from all over the organization. Sometimes they were public affairs people, sometimes they were IT people, and in some cases they were the legal or HR people, and in others everyone was all in the room at one time. And there was no real – well, and even in social media and in the commercial environment, there's no real who should own this. You know, should it be marketing or should it be public affairs or in the government, should it be public affairs or legal or HR or IT? And everyone wanted to bucket it under a specific or existing organizational construct. And I don't know if you can. I think it depends on too many factors to say, well, this is going to be public affairs dog and pony show and we're just along for the ride. I think it has to do with really looking at what you want to accomplish and making sure that you address all of the various factors that are in play. I think it comes into, you know, are you trying to use it for public affairs purposes? Well, fantastic. Then let's get the public affairs people in the room, but realize that you're going to need access to those things. And you know, public affairs isn't providing or blocking access to social media. That's usually the IT department. So you need to involve them too. But, you know, for you to say, well, I'm going to own it, it's you're running down a road of saying, well, I own it, so give me access. And then you have the IT people saying, well, hey, hold on here. You know, we want to help you out. We want to give you access, but we have these concerns. But if they don't have any ownership or at least feel like they have ownership, it ends up being a dog and cat fight to, you know, who has the, you know, the higher ranking director, whose boss is who has more pull with the, you know, the big boss. And that's not a real scalable or good way to accomplish things. And so, you know, I'm advocating that you get everyone in the room, theoretically, you know, not physically in one room together, but, you know, you involve everyone in the process and collaborate with them vice, you know, public affairs doing one thing and then sending it to IT and then they have a chop on it. And then it goes to legal and then they have a chop on it. Why not just have everyone collaborate on it up front? Voice the concerns, have a conversation about it, and then move forward with it from there.
Mm-hmm. And typically, when you say a chop, it a final chop. Is that what you mean? Like a final? I mean, there are various ways when a proposed directive or internal directive goes around within an organization, whether it's Booz Allen or a federal agency, it goes around to the public affairs office and the IT and all the different people and they say, hey, we're proposing to change this aspect of how our organization works in this way, and here's a draft. And so
sure.
The first time around, it is kind of a heads up, and you do get the opportunity, at least most places, but not always, to have some input in the very beginning. And certainly the earlier, whether it's a citizen or any type of relationship, even a personal relationship, if I'm more involved in helping pick out the couch, then I feel like I have ownership over that couch.
Exactly.
As we recently did here in my house. even though my wife...
Feel like you have ownership over it?
Yes. And, well, she had the final say. So it was, she had 51% of the vote. But knowing we both knew that going in, but at least she didn't just drag me down and say, look, is this the couch you want? Say yes or no, because I'm going to make a decision today. It was not like that. It was, yes, we were looking and shopping and da-da-da-da. So,
right.
Yes,
and
that's the thing. I was involved, and at least she humored me. But, we did. I could see that she was taking my comments into consideration. So, yes, I own 49% of that couch.
and I think that similar approach is something that I've seen work. I think it's the problem with the old CHOP style of doing it is that once the policy is released or the guidelines or whatever it is that you're looking to do is released, everyone looks at it and says, oh, well, my edits weren't included, or I can't believe they pandered to, such and such department instead of, including my concerns. And it ends up being no one's happy with it, as opposed to, with what you said is you may not be entirely happy with it, but, that might not have been the couch that you would have picked, but at least you had input into the discussion and you were able to come to a compromise and address everyone's concerns so that you can both work with that couch, as opposed to, your wife picking out a couch that you want no part of.
Yeah, take it or leave it,
Right.
So, and then it ends up becoming a big fight.
Exactly, and which, you never see in the federal government.
Yeah, right. Yep. Well, I will say I've been married 28 years, so I have... And we have had big fights, but yes, it's a learning, and it's all about learning to listen. And I think that's what this whole open government effort really is about, people, about how do we make the federal government, at least, and other parts too, not just in federal, but at least as far as the open government directive and things go, is how do we get the federal government to be better listeners than they have in the past? And not that because there have been opportunities for public input in the past, but being better at it. And certainly because of the technology, it certainly makes it much easier to do that. But I think one of the commenters under your blog was saying, and I think you mentioned it too, is that that the technology is really an enabler. And now the hard part is, how do we... The hard part is the listening. That's the hard part. So, anyway, but I encourage people to go there and look at your blog and see the different comments that were made there and so forth. And I think it's slowly dawning on people that, especially a lot of the, younger people like yourself, Steve, who, I'm in my 50s, so I can remember when I first, 20 years ago when I stumbled onto the internet and was involved in public participation at the time and thinking, wow, this is just great. Just wait until everybody gets online. And now that everybody is, there's the part about the listening. Oh, yeah. And that's a lot. Getting people to be good listeners is much harder than simply giving them a high-speed modem.
Well, I think it goes beyond just listening to actually caring. I think that's a part of things that we forgot, and even organizationally. I mean, for the longest time here at Booz Allen, would have a send an email in to ask the senior leadership or contact the director, and it was this email suggestion box that, you'd submit a question or an answer or whatever, and it didn't all too often it would come back with a canned marketing response that didn't really answer your question, but it, you know, you got a response. So you were listening, but you didn't care. And so now it's taking that extra step and not only listen, but care and involve.
Yeah, and when I say listening, I guess it's because some people think listen just means, oh, yes, there's noise, blah, blah, I heard you talking, so... But that's not really, and my when I say listening, and I'm it, different people means different people to different things. I mean really listening, because when same thing going back to my marriage again, yeah, I'll be listening to my wife talk, and then I'll be going and then she'll say, "Are you listening to me?" I'll go, "Yeah, something about," and she catches me.
Yep.
So I wasn't really listening. I was
yeah, I've done that maybe once or twice.
Yeah, pretending to listen. I'm getting better at it, but anyway, but it's the same thing. It's yeah, really, truly listening, and you know, it's not simply an on or off thing. It's these are levels. It's just try to be better than in the past. But anyway, since I've always been trying to get people to call in, and perhaps later on we can get even. I haven't even had a chance to look at the USDA draft plan, so this is exciting to be able to do that. But had you looked at it at all?
The USDA's plan?
Yeah.
No, I have not. Okay.
Oh, I don't mean to get you into trouble if they're one of your clients.
No, it's one of my it's saved as one of my things to review as soon as I have time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, fine. Okay, then good. I didn't want to say. Drag you into it and say, yes, what an incredibly insightful document. Oh, by the way, I wrote it. I'll write it.
No, I saw Amanda Emich's tweet about it the other day and made a point to go out and you know, tag it so I'd have some time to go review. I just haven't had time to take a look yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, anyway, let's see. I'm going to take a call here and see if there's some people who they may be listening, and in which case they don't have to respond when I... But if that's the case, I'll we'll get some. I should say that hopefully Jen Gustetic from Phase One Consulting Group will join us later on. She's speaking. She's been helping the working with the Department of Transportation, and that's not a secret or anything there, because we had the Open Government Workshop there back in January, February.
January or February.
January, that's right. Yeah, it was January, and so she's at a speaking engagement. May or may not be able to join us later on, but once I see her phone number come up, I'll try to pull her in. But I'm just thought I'd let you know that that's the situation there. So, hi, we have a caller. Are you there, or wish to speak, or have a question, or anything? Okay, just listening. And here's another one. Is there someone there who has a comment or question on today's show? Or just wants to listen?
Someone's there.
We can hear you. No, that's fine. okay, I'll put them both back on mute then. But... And anyway, it's perfectly fine if people want to use the phone to listen in. I've done it before for other for Gov2O radio. One time when I was driving down to Washington, I listened to it on the phone, and so that was fine. But you know, I do see the phone numbers on the control panel here, but I can't tell if somebody's just listening or if they actually want to speak. But that's fine. Go ahead. And let's see. So, gee, like I said, I'm going back to the going back to your posting, though, I guess that if there are things like social media, and I think there was actually a comment. It was probably like the second or third one here. Let me see if I can find it real quick. By a Tim Dibble.
Yep.
Who compared it to, he has a short note here that says, like a hammer, which is useful to everyone depending on their need, ability, and possible training, the social media tools are arguably useful to everyone, again, depending on their need, abilities, and training. And like the hammer, there has to be someone somewhere in the organization who is responsible for maintaining the hammer, fixing the hammer when it breaks, or buying a new one when it's reached its useful life, showing people how to use the hammer, how to get the most benefit from it, and occasionally correcting them if they're going to cause themselves or others injury, which I suppose social media can do.
Right.
So I think, yeah, using the hammer, it's yes, everybody loves the hammer, but, you know, sometimes the hammer is not, can be misused or overused or something like that. So I can certainly see a part of an agency, whether it's, you know, public affairs or information technology people or some place, and that's typically the case, is that there has to be some one group that's ultimately responsible. Even when they pull in everybody and they all sit around the table, when push comes to shove, just like my wife, you know, somebody's got to decide, are we going to get the couch? And like I said, when you're in a marriage and it's 50-50, then or there needs to be a tiebreaker or whatever. So, and I defer to her, my wife on furniture, and she defers to me on computer equipment and things like that. So it's a trade-off there. But as far as it goes, bureaucratically, of course, somebody needs to be the tiebreaker or the person who makes the ultimate decision, because otherwise it'll just go round and round. You'll just have, you know, there won't be consensus.
Right.
So is that... Do you see that? Disagree or?
No, I don't necessarily disagree, and I think that in every organization, that person that maintains the hammer, if you will, is going to be different. I just don't think we should rush to say, you know, so and so is going to own that, or this has to fall under their purview. I think it'll like. I use the example of here, what happened at Booz Allen, where, you know, one of our senior leaders asked me at one point, probably 2 years ago, he said, well, why are you the guy that's going out and doing all this talking about social media? You don't own this. This isn't yours. And I said, well, no, but I kind of took it up. You can search and find all of my material. You can find my blog posts. You can find my wiki pages. And enough people had done that. And what came to me as the POC for that, as the person to talk to, and I just kind of became the owner, because I was the one that had the time, bandwidth, interest, expertise, skills, whatever you want to call it, to do that. And I think in all of these cases, if you bring everyone into the room, someone will become that leader, and everyone will kind of either follow suit because they know what they're talking about, and they have the group's best interest in mind, or they will, someone else will emerge, and they'll have those conversations and kind of come to that consensus of who's going to be that person, or who's going to be that team, or who's going to be that group, who has the best sense of everyone's interests. I think the problem lies is when you first start and you say, you know, this is going to be led by IT, and you don't have these conversations before that. You just automatically elect them as the leader without having that vetting or those conversations. Everyone else kind of feels that, you know, they don't have that level of ownership. You know, they don't have that 50% or that 49% level of ownership. They have none at that point because it's theirs, and IT is essentially throwing them a bone by saying, oh, yeah, come join our meeting. We'll listen to you. And then we'll decide if your views merit our attention or not. And I'm not just picking on IT. I mean, you could replace that with public affairs or HR or any one singular department. And so you get into that trouble is if you elect an owner right away, it's real hard to say, you know, everyone else has ownership too. So that's why I said, you know, who owns it? Everyone and no one, because you need, you know, everyone to feel as though they have ownership. But no one really should necessarily be known as, well, that's the owner, that's the source that does it.
Mm. Well,
does that make sense?
Yeah, and I guess ownership, it could be considered primary ownership, whereas if the IT, if for instance, say the IT department is considered, just for example, that they say, okay, IT has primary ownership. Doesn't mean sole ownership, it's just, but they're the lead on this. And part of the team, say, on open government would be you know, the open government team would be public affairs and, or, you know, and security or different other different parts of the, you know, congressional relations or whatever you want to call it and so forth. But that's part of the team, but that the, and that the primary party or primary owner, if you want to use that term, would need to show that they had consulted and that it would all be an open record that, you know, okay, well, here were the concerns of the team and this, you know, public affairs had these concerns. And so it's all above board. And I think you put something in the blog by saying that as long as it's all transparent about how these things shake out, and so that if, you know, it can be seen that public affairs had this concern.
Right.
And maybe that wasn't going to be addressed right now, but they're on the record, and then, hey, if it turns out that they were right, then everybody will know that, hey, public affairs raised that point, and somebody made a judgment call and made the best choice at the time, but now it looks like that really was something that looking back needed to be addressed, and so that's fine. And it's not like, you know, gotcha, or I told you so, although it certainly feels like it, you know, but at least it'll be, everybody can go in eyes wide open, and it won't be a closed door session where somebody tries to take over, because if that is the case and it's all on a webcam or, you know, a transcript or some transparent record of how the decision making, how you got to that point, then everybody will see, oh, I see, somebody took this and pushed it through and made everybody eat it.
Right.
And look what happened. So they're going to be a lot less apt to do that, because they'll be able to, oh, no, can't do that, because there's going to be a record and everybody's going to see I rammed this down everybody else's throat.
Right, right.
So I think, in a sense, it's funny, because this is almost the same model on a smaller scale inside an agency that we're trying to duplicate with people outside the agency as far as stakeholders go. And regular citizens. So certainly I would hope that we could get it right inside an agency before they, if you can't do it within an agency, and that's part of what I've been trying to push, is like, wait a minute, you can't have internal, you can't be transparent to the people outside and collaborative with the people outside if you can't be transparent and collaborative with the people down the hall.
Yeah, I mean, how are you going to trust the general public if you can't even trust the guy down the hall? It's a tough sell. So,
yeah,
I mean, I think everything becomes a lot easier if you start kind of in these small steps internally.
Yeah. So this is all very healthy. What you're talking about and what you're doing at Booz Allen is exactly what should be happening. You know, if that's how you're going to, if that's how it evolves, I hope it does. The whole idea about that it's transparent to the people in the organization. Well, how come we're doing it this way? Okay, well, I wasn't at that meeting, but I can see what happened at the meeting. I can see the concerns, and I can see all this and so forth and so on. And okay, let's give it a shot and see what happens. And if it didn't work, then we'll tweak it based on what we know and so forth and so on. But it all becomes clear to people how we got to where we are, as opposed to just, you know, pushing the buttons and trying it again and not learning anything. So we'll see whether or not you can, whether Booz Allen can be, whether certain organizations can model that type of decision making, internal decision making, and transparency, and you know, make it work in the real world, so to speak.
And I think, I mean, a lot of organizations are already doing this in various parts. It's not necessarily just related to social media. I mean, you could apply that singular model to, you know, any number of other areas. It's just a matter that this happens to work well with social media and open government. But I think other organizations can look to other areas that have been doing this for years, whether they did it for the internet or for email or whatever. I think that, you know, it's not just mutually exclusive to social media and open government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I've worked at five different federal agencies, so I know that each agency has a certain personality, and a lot of people like to think, they just think of the federal bureaucracy as one big homogeneous blob that's the same inside and out and so forth and so on. But there it is like each agency has its own personality, and just like a group, any group of people has its own personality, so it's collective personality. And then within the group, you'll find personalities within that. So, you know, one component of you know, Department of Agriculture, you know, and they have different services underneath them, like the Forest Service and so forth and so on. They have personalities there. So it's not surprising that certain offices, certain parts of the U.S., of the federal bureaucracy will be experimenting, because they're more secure. They have different tools, they're different environment. So they're like, hey, let's try this out. Whereas, and I understand, in other parts of the government, it's very dicey to try something new, because if you try it and it fails, then it certainly affects your career in a not good way. So it's good, I guess, that and so the thing is to be able to point to those organizations like the USDA, who is putting this out for, you know, I applaud them for being able, somebody must have given somebody permission to do it, to put it out for comment even before the due date, when most federal agencies won't. They don't have to. They just need to come out with something on April 7th, and it won't be up for public comment. Hopefully it'll be up for public comment afterwards, and it's just like a working draft, but we'll see how that goes. And I'm sure different agencies will do it different ways, but we need to encourage those who are taking some chances, and that's very dangerous in a bureaucracy.
Yeah, there's a lot of risks, and it's kind of scary, but at the same time, I think because there are a lot of risks and because it's kind of scary is where we'll also see some of the greatest benefits and some of the greatest positive results happen from it too. So, you know, there's definitely a balance there that government agencies have to, you know, take into consideration for what works for them. You know, not everyone is going to be able to go do that. Not everyone's going to be ready to become totally transparent like that. So it's a matter of assessing your own individual organizational culture and seeing what works for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to see if we have a caller here, and I'm going to see if he or she is willing to have a question or a comment. But I just wanted to say that one thing I've noticed is that in the ideas like that there's some way to get people who are working in the federal bureaucracy to take risks. If only we can get people to take risks. And I'm thinking, why would somebody take risks with their career? Like, maybe if you get them liquored up or some, you know, smoke something, it's like, but, you know, then they're acting irrationally. If you're working in the typical bureaucracy where innovation, experimentation is not the way to the top, it's a way to, you know, it's a very risky thing for one's career, and that somehow some prizes, if only we need to put out some prizes so people will start acting irrationally. Like, what kind of prize would that? It would have to be like $1 million. and you'd have to be pretty sure you're going to win, because if you went home and said, hey, honey, guess what? I just screwed up my career. Oh, yeah, well, there was a 100-to-1 chance that I might win $1 million. Well, you know, it's just like, what did you do that for?
Yeah, it's not about encouraging your people to take risks in as much as it's removing those barriers that, you know, that make what those people are doing, that make them risks. You know, they a lot of this stuff shouldn't be risky, but in some cases the perception there is that it is. And I would venture a guess that in a majority of those cases that perception's wrong. I don't think it's, you know, doing a lot of this stuff isn't as risky as some people make it out to be. You know, for example, I said, you know, one of the things is when a member of leadership starts a blog internally, or, you know, wants to do social media internally, that a lot of people think it's very risky to go out there and disagree with that leader on his blog. you know, that shouldn't be risky. And if it is in reality a risk, that risk should be removed. But in many cases, the leader wants to, you know, have that debate back and forth, wants to, you know, have an intellectual conversation. And it's not a risk, but it's a perceived risk. And so how do you get around that perception?
And that's the thing is, how do you make it safe? And that's actually one of the, and a little plug for me, if you go to the OpenGSA .ideascale.com, that was the number one. I got the most votes for how to make it safe, internal transparency, but the idea that there is probably some technology out there, and I know there is technology out there, that you can cloak yourself and just remove the who is this guy, because it shouldn't really matter whether it's Steve Raddick or Steve Jones or Steve Buckley or, you know, an idea, it should, whatever comment should stand on its own merits. And, you know, whether that's truly your name or not shouldn't really matter.
Right.
And so that's the way to be able to tell the emperor that he's wearing no clothes or that he's got toilet paper stuck on the bottom of his shoe or whatever. But it's the other middle managers. You know, it's not like the top guy's going to squish somebody. But once if you've outed yourself as a different thinker or a dangerous thinker to the middle managers, then who've gotten to where they have by because of the culture, then you're a threat to the status quo. So it's
right. Not,
the boss, the Secretary of Agriculture, is not going to fire anybody or squash their career. It's the people in between.
And I think that's always been the case with all of these things, and you hear it referred to as either the clay layer or, you know, I did a post about a year ago called, you know, social media scary for the middle managers, and that group is going to be your hardest stakeholder, whether you're doing an open government initiative or internal social media or enterprise 2.0 type of thing. It's those middle managers that are going to be the toughest nut to crack, because in a lot of cases they have the most to lose.
Yeah, and it's not a culture is the written rules and the unwritten rules, and the unwritten rules are more powerful than the written rules because they're not written down.
Right.
And you can't issue a written rule saying, okay, I understand, I'm the head of this organization. I understand people are following unwritten rules, and so I'm going to tell you, I'm going to issue a rule not to follow unwritten rules. It's like, what are they? You know, if they're unwritten, you can't see them.
Right.
But it's all based on actions. So even though it doesn't say anywhere that you're not supposed to challenge the status quo, people notice what happens to the if the careers of people who challenge the status quo go downhill. Then nobody has to write it down; they can see it. So it's not. So that's the thing is for the leadership to walk their talk, because that's more powerful than any memo they write. Although it is good to put it down in paper, but to write it down and then say, and then to act it out and say, I will value advice, even if it's anonymous. I will value, you know, or things like that. But then they say, well, I guess so. He actually does, you know, walk that whole walk the talk thing. So that's
mm-hmm.
powerful. But we'll see. A lot of this, like I said, I'm a little, having gone through it in the 1990s when they tried to change the culture in the reinventing government effort, I don't want this to happen again. I don't want the same mistakes to be made all over again. So that's why I'm interested in the whole reason for having the show and so forth and so on. It's to avoid past mistakes. So anyway, I'm going to see if someone who's been listening wants to finally say something here. If you don't, just that's fine. You can just be quiet, but I'm going to...
Was Jen able to jump on?
No, I don't think it's her. But is there a caller who would like to make a question or comment? No? Okay, that's fine. No, I guess Jen is still speaking. Is there anything that you would like to, talk about, Steve, that I didn't put on a link here that you think is a any particular event or upcoming or
Yeah, I mean, I'll put in a quick plug for the Gov2O Expo coming up at the end of May. I should probably know this. let me look it up here.
Well, is it just gov2oexpo.com or something like that?
Yeah, I'm actually going to give you the... It's gov2oexpo.com, May 25th through 27th here in D.C., and the full disclosure, I'm on the program committee for that, but I think that that type of event, or in reality, any type of event, I went to a happy hour last Thursday that Peter Corbett had put on for My Strategy Labs, and any sort of event where you can go and meet a lot of these people in person, you know, Gov2O Radio and Open Gov Radio and the blogs and GovLoop, I mean, they're fantastic tools for, you know, helping keep those connections alive, but it's still the in-person connection that for some reason, and some sociology person will tell me, maybe Ari Herzog can give light into this, but once you meet someone, it almost opens up a new door to that relationship once you meet them in person, and these types of events are critical for meeting those people, discussing with those people, to the point you just had. There's a lot of things people won't put in print, and so when you go to these meetings, you get a chance to go and talk with, any number of people. You get to talk with Steve Ressler, you get to talk with Emma Antunes from Spacebook, you get to talk with Don Burke and Chris Rasmussen from Intellipedia, and you get to ask them, like, what failed? You know, what didn't work? What were your biggest challenges internally? And you get to have discussions around things that they might not necessarily, you know, say in an interview with FCW or, you know, put on their blog because, you know, it's like airing dirty laundry. And so these events, you get to meet with them, you get to know them as people, you get to see that a lot of this stuff that you're reading about, whether it's data.gov or you know, GovLoop or Spacebook or Intellipedia, they started from humble beginnings just like things that you're looking at. I mean, they're started from things of, hey, why can't we do this? You know, it doesn't make sense. This is free. Let's go try this. And I think it's incredibly powerful to get those interactions and build those relationships with those people across the government.
Right. And the same thing happened with I hadn't been down to D.C. for a while. I was, you know, lived and worked there for 25 years. And now I'm back up where I grew up in Massachusetts, out here on Cape Cod, but so I can't just pop over like I used to when I lived in Bowie, you know, pop into town to take in a happy hour or something like that. But it was good to come down for the Open Government Directive workshop series that Lucas Chiaffi has set up along with some of others of us who were there who contribute to those. But particularly at the second one in the January at DOT, you and I had spoken before on the phone, but then, you know, you get to meet somebody, hi, Steve, in person, and, you know, we went across the street to the Marriott, Courtyard Marriott or whatever it was, and it was good to be able to look somebody in the eye and size them up and get a better sense of who they are and what they represent that you just can't get on the phone or online or even on a webcam. And maybe it has something to do with alcohol. Mind-altering drugs. I heard something, what was it? I did watch a video. People follow that, one of the video links. It was at the Transparency Camp. Clay Johnson from the Sunlight Foundation said, you know, everybody's heard that sunlight is the best disinfectant, but alcohol's even better. something along those lines, that's the way to transparency, you know. And so, yes, you can, it's hard to be, or easier to be transparent, I guess, is when there's alcohol involved and the words come out a little bit more freely and so forth. And one of the things I remember from my high school Latin is in vinum veritas, one of the few things I remember, but in wine there is truth.
Yes, so. And we might have to see if did you notice when you were looking at the USDA gov plan was alcohol one of the key strategies in there?
What did it?
No, I was saying, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We should look for some fine print in there.
Well, yeah, I guess if everybody wore webcams to the happy hour, then we'd really know what went on. But anyway, but yeah, it is that personal connection. And until we can, we can get it connected with webcams and online and so forth, but until we can pour each other drinks, I guess, through the internet, and I guess we can all still drink our drinks and hold them up to the camera or something like that. I don't know. But okay, well, that's enough. Let's see, how are we doing on time? We've got about 10 minutes. Let's see. I will. It did say that. Yeah, the link that I provided to the USDA plan is actually a link to a. An article in Federal Computer Week, and I hadn't followed it all the way to the end, but according to this, the USDA is asking for comments, and I'm not sure how that's going to happen or where to send the comments, but for those who are familiar, I guess there is a link on my blog to the Google group for the Open Government Directive, so I'll put in a plug for that. If you go to ustransparency.com, you'll see a link on the lower right-hand side for the Open Government Directive Google group. So if commenting on a blog isn't your idea of a discussion, then certainly an old-fashioned email list, which is what a Google group is, it's an opt-out, opt-in method for following things by email, then that would be the place to. And I'm sure the email traffic is going to pick up now that all these plans are going to come out, which is like 27 different plans. So, yes, and for people like you, Steve, and Booz Allen, I'm sure it sounds like you're going to get a lot more work if you haven't already. I mean, I'm sure you have already, but it might even ramp up after the plans are put out.
Well, I mean, whenever there's any initiative, whether it's open government or, anything in the last 10 years, anytime anyone's trying to do, anything big that involves change, change management internally or externally, anything like that, I think that's my area of expertise is how to use that, and I just look at using social media. It helps us do that better. So it's not necessarily about let's go and get on Twitter, let's go get on Facebook. It's how do these tools help us change? How do these tools make us more open and transparent? I'm more interested in that than the transactional. We need to get on Twitter. Well. Okay, why? Why do you want to get on Twitter? What are you going to accomplish with that? So I think that anytime we can help kind of make a change for the better, whether we use technology or not, that's the sweet spot that I like to be in.
Mm-hmm. And it's like something Stephen Covey said, although I'm sure he borrowed it from somebody else: begin with the end in mind.
So, yes.
Yeah. Where do you want to end up? What are you shooting for? Before we give you this hammer or tool. Maybe it is the tool you need, but what are you trying to do?
Right.
And if you're trying to, are you trying to hammer in nails or are you trying to screw in screws? Because, yes, you could hammer in those screws, but it would be something a little better, like a screwdriver, yeah, that would do that better. And, of course, it sounds simple when you talk about it that way, but it's not as clear-cut with all the various tools, social media tools that are out there now. People just want to, a lot of people are enthusiastic, and so they're like, yeah, let me add it,
I'll pull back on to and put in a plug for what Jeffrey Levy from the EPA always says is mission, tools, metrics, teach. And the first thing in that is mission, sorry. Is what you're doing going to help you accomplish your mission?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another way of putting that is in the quality community they call it plan, do, check, adjust. So it's just a continuous improvement loop.
Right.
Okay, let's try this. Let's think about it. Let's try it. Let's measure. Let's see how it did. And then, you know, okay, well, tweak it and adjust it. And then you just keep going round and round until you optimize whatever it is you're trying to do. And, you know, whether you're working on a car or, you know, it applies to anything. And if you miss one of those, if you don't know what you're measuring, if you don't measure, you know, well, did that work? I don't know. You know, if it's like, well, how do you know if it worked well or not? You know, so you can do, if you're adjusting your website to be more user-friendly and you don't have any way to figure out whether it's working, then how do you know?
Yeah, and who's defining user-friendly? You know, too many times we don't actually ask the user what's user-friendly.
Yeah, yep. And that's the thing, is that's one of the other ideas I had put on out there was the idea of setting up metrics and of asking. And when it really comes down to it, in my mind, is that you – and we did a show a couple of weeks ago from the people from 4C Results came on, or Dave Lewin from 4C Results, and they do online surveys of federal websites. And that's the only way you're going to know. Ask the people, are they spending more time on your website? Well, maybe that's a good thing, but maybe they're lost. Maybe that's just one metric, and you need to look at all of them. And another way to do that is basically just ask people. And the only way you can really do that is with a survey. Because if you leave it up, if you may be a little, a person can be somewhat subjective if you try to think you know what another person wants.
And right.
Just like with a marriage, you might think you know what your wife or spouse wants. Best way, ask them.
So what did we learn today? You know, the best way to open government is learn from your marriage and drink alcohol.
Yes. When you're drinking with your spouse, say, honey, did you want the white wine or the red wine? Or did you want this guy? From then on. Yeah, so if only we could all go to happy hour together, but since that's not practical for everybody to have a big, giant Woodstock someplace, we'll have to do it the easy way, which is to be sober and to do it online, yes, in the cold, harsh light of day. was there something else I was going to say? There was something interesting, and I was wondering what your thoughts are. We have like maybe 2 minutes left, so I'll try to sum this up and give you a minute to respond. But I had heard a couple people say that they came out of the transparency camp this past weekend, and the idea that, well, maybe it's not just about transparency. Maybe it's about participation and collaboration. You know, and so people who had been transparency fanatics are realizing that maybe it's not all about transparency. Do you see any movement, or do you see that in what people are?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the natural evolution of, you know, and let's, I forget who it was, maybe Luke over at GovFresh or Andrea from Gartner mentioned, you know, okay, making all this data available and transparent, great, but you know, what are you going to do with it? Why are you making that available? What are people? Is it data that people actually want? Let's go out and have that conversation and find out, you know, what data do you actually want to make transparent? What do you count as a high value data set? And I think people are seeing that beyond the initial fire hose of let's just make all of our data open, and now it's okay, well, what do you want us to make open, and how are you going to use it, and how can we help you? And so I think it's the natural evolution of how these things work. So I think you're going to start seeing more and more of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just a matter of, you know, I guess as an older person, I'm finally figuring out, okay, well, they wouldn't have believed it if I told them, you know, a year ago. But it's almost like the teenagers that I've raised, you know, yeah, sometimes you just have to let people figure it out for themselves. And then you can come back and say, see, told ya. And they hate that. Your teenagers hate that. So, anyway. But, okay, we have about 30 seconds left. And so thanks, Steve Raddick, for coming on the show. And certainly things will be picking up with open government plans coming out left and right in the next few weeks. And I'm Steve Buckley, and hope to see you again next Tuesday at 2 for Open Government Radio.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.